Man, it's always a pleasure to have Zach Goodall on the show, Swamp 24/7. We were kind of joking off air, Zach. It's been a wild, eventful couple of weeks here, months down in Gainesville. How's it going, buddy?
It's been wild. It's been long. Like you said, it's got to have felt like a couple of years, and we have 8 more games left of this. So I'm feeling like a few years are going to be taken off my life, really, in the next couple of months.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to get into, but mm-hmm. I thought it would be interesting to just gauge your thoughts. If nothing else, Zach, if I could, you know, I looked at my crystal ball here in the summer when there was hype, when there was excitement for Florida's football season, and I could guarantee you that the Gators were going to give up 0 to LIU. That may be not that big of a surprise, but 16 points to South Florida. And I'm really only counting 10 to LSU because kind of 10 of it came on offensive mistakes. And then 26 to Miami. I know that's a lot, but if I were to tell you that the defense gave up that amount of points, what would you guess Florida's record would be after 4 games?
3-1. Maybe 4-0. I mean, like, you got to give credit to LSU and Miami for how good I truly think they are. Goes to show, I would probably have said that the loss would be against Miami. And I didn't even anticipate Carson Beck sans this game looking as good as he has so far this season. But with their offensive firepower, with their offensive line, I would have maybe pegged that one as like a Miami's in the 30. No, I flip that. I don't know what I'm saying. Their defense being as good as it is, because that was expected. Like, I thought that they were with Reuben Bain and that whole group. I would have figured maybe they give up 26 and Florida just isn't able to keep up offensively. And I'll tell you what, they haven't kept up offensively at all. It's been a disaster.
Right. And I mean, I think that's the biggest surprise, right? Because you get, again, we knew DJ Lagway, the months and months of speculation, but offensive line, many had as arguably maybe the best in the conference. All these receivers. I think anybody that knows anything about college football respects Jaden Ball as a really blossoming running back that could be one of the best in the conference. Yet we're sitting here, and I rewatched the Miami game.
God bless you.
I just did that last night. I was tired, Zach, and I knew that would put me to sleep by halftime, and mission accomplished. So shout out Billy Napier. If for nothing else, you know, if you have a case of insomnia, throw on Florida's offense and that'll cure it real quick. What I mean, there's so many things here, but what the heck's going on in Gainesville with the offense?
Yeah, I mean, I maintain what we talked about at SEC Media Days. I think this team is more talented right now than it would, you know, naturally get credit for being 1-3 through 4. But my concern at the time was twofold. One, if DJ Lagway's injuries press into the season, I don't care what anyone says. And I know that Billy said that he's 100% and good. I think his shoulder is still an issue. There was reporting earlier in the year that he needed surgery and didn't get it. Well, to me, he looks like a quarterback who needed surgery on his throwing shoulder and didn't get it. And the second fold of my concerns was that this roster is talented and that the only thing that could get in its way is the subpar coaching that we've seen from Billy Napier and company over multiple years in Gainesville. You put those two things together, right? Obviously the franchise cornerstone in a quarterback being not only still seemingly dealing with, even if he's not injured, but dealing with the fallout of his injuries and poor coaching, especially poor offensive coordinating and play calling, which Billy Napier is still going to hold on to. He just told us this a few minutes ago. It's a recipe for absolute disaster. And that's exactly what we've seen unfold. And how much of that is Billy Napier, you know, catering to Lagway, obviously not being as dynamic as he was last year because of the injuries and the lack of development time and practice over the offseason? I'm not sure. I think it's fair to consider that as part of the reason. But again, like, we have 3 years of Billy Napier-led offenses being head-scratching, to put it kindly, and totally underperforming, to put it bluntly. So I'm inclined to believe it's a mix of both as to why the offense is completely flailing to begin this season.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess I don't know that anybody, yourself included, would have the answer to this, but why is Billy Napier so reluctant to give up the play calling given the results? Is it, I mean, the only, and I think this is speculation, but I'm not sure, but, you know, he's not alone. We've had other coaches like Gus Malzahn, Jimbo Fisher, and, you know, the narrative is these guys, this is as close as you can get to playing in the game is being the play caller. Yet if it's not working, I know Billy Napier is a very smart guy. Is there any reason that you can tell why he refuses to give that up?
I mean, maybe the theory on it being as close as he would get to playing again as a former quarterback, there could be some credence to that. I don't have a firm answer as to why, other than throughout the offseason when he was asked multiple times and it was rumored, although I never bought the rumors, that the boosters or UAA or whoever's in his ear at Florida was telling him to get a play caller. He's just convinced himself that he's the best man for the job. He said that this is what got him here. I remember explicitly that was his quote over the offseason. I completely disagree with that notion. I think his performance as a CEO type coach at Louisiana paired with his offense working in the Sun Belt, maybe, is what got him to Florida. His recruiting expertise that especially he performed at Louisiana is what got him here. I don't know why he believes that, because I think that anyone would tell him that has a decent opinion and is able to be rational would tell him that that's a mistake and flawed logic. But it's interesting that on multiple occasions now, he's been willing to change defensive play coordinators or play callers, whether it was Patrick Toney. I believe he was kind of pushed out there after season one. Austin Armstrong losing that job title midway or early last season, and it was given to Ron Roberts. So he's had no issue on that side of the ball if he thinks that things are underperforming to change who's in charge. I do not for the life of me understand why he can't apply that same logic and reasoning to the offense, because it's gotten worse every year. Like it peaked in his first season leading the offense and has gotten worse despite all of these players at this point, sans a couple, being his guys, his recruits, developed within the scheme to where they should be coordinating or executing what's called upon them in this offense to relative perfection or with ease. It's not like he's just taking over, installing an offense and expecting players to change their mold to it. These guys should be able to accomplish it. And the fact that they're not says to me everything, that it's just not a good offense.
Right. And if anybody wants a follow-up that was recorded earlier, go check out Zach on the Swamp 24/7 podcast, because he was on a heater and he's reiterated a lot of those talking points. But also, I thought it was pretty a bold statement, but I think it's completely fair that Florida should consider sitting DJ Lagway, because he's just been so bad. And I don't like to call out the players, but it's calling it like it is. I mean, I think it's I haven't done my updated quarterback rankings, but he's probably going to be 14 or 15 out of the 16 in the SEC. Can you kind of share with us why you suggested he should be set?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I in no way mean that should this be a permanent benching of DJ Lagway, but again, I maintain that he should have gotten shoulder surgery when he had the opportunity, and it seems like that was opted against. So you're dealing with that in and of itself. I'm not sure that you can just continue to rest that and expect it to get better, because I mean, we saw them try to do that this offseason and obviously did not pan out well. I think his mobility seems limited too. I think that when we've seen him try and scramble, it's not looked nearly the same, and that I would assume comes from the calf strain that he dealt with in July and August. I mean, just against Miami, granted, he was practicing yesterday, so it's not a concern, but he was stepped on and that required him to be in a boot following the game. So he's just been unable to avoid injuries to this point. I mean, it's five going back to the Georgia game last year, if you factor in the hamstring as well. You pair that with the lack of practice time he had during the summer and the spring, even into the fall, and he does not look like the quarterback that we know he's capable of being. So if that's the problem, that I would let him sit to make sure that his injuries can heal up as best as humanly possible before you're comfortable putting him out there again, sans getting surgery, because that would end his season. And you make sure that he can take a few weeks without the pressure of going out there every Saturday and underperforming to improve in the practice setting. to accomplish what is required of him at quarterback in this offense, which again, whole thing. But if this is what you're putting out there, I don't think you're doing him any favors. Matter of fact, you are probably hurting him mentally. Obviously, long-term prospects as someone that was considered a potential future first-round pick, you are damaging his reputation if you continue to just trot this out there again and again, because he's not getting better with the reps.
Right.
He's not getting better with each week what you see on film. In fact, I would argue 5 interceptions on the stat book is worse, but 61 passing yards in a game, to me, is another step back from just the week before at LSU. So what are you going to accomplish if you keep just trying the same thing over and over again? I don't think the reps are helping. I would give him the time just to reset, get back to where we think he can be. And you've got a promising freshman quarterback as your backup in Tremel Jones. Let him get some experience. Don't really risk burning his red shirt because he's only appeared in one game so far. Let him get out and get some reps.
Mm-hmm. You have any idea why the offensive line has been struggling so much? I mean, again, it was touted as one of the best. And I mean, I think the thing they're doing the best at is penalties. You know what?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, like, listen, I personally don't think it has been as bad as some fans are claiming. Sans this Miami game, and again, I think you have to account for just how dominant that front seven is. Not even the front four, not even just the edge rushers, but across the board, like, that defense is going to wreak havoc on you. Other than that, I think Austin Barber has played very well at left tackle. I think Jake Slaughter has not been the All-American center we saw last year, but has been serviceable. Nyjah Harris on the left side has been serviceable. They've just these penalties, whether it's holding, and I think a lot of them, as Billy Napier has said, and I think he's right, when DJ has to break out and maybe he's abandoning reads too quickly and trying to make a play on his own, sometimes they get caught holding as they're on a moving target almost and the pocket breaks. It's those penalties, and I would say the right side of the line as well. They've had to rotate it right tackle because they've been unable to replace Brendan Crenshaw-Dixon to the fullest extent, at least. I think that there's some promise in Caden Jones, but ultimately he hasn't lived up to that billing, and certainly neither did Bryce Lovett over his first couple of starts to the season. Damian George has been okay, but I think he really peaked last year when he moved from tackle to guard and just had a career year. Now it's, I don't want to say looking like Damian George of the past, because he was really just not a quality tackle in the SEC, but he hasn't taken the next step at guard, and I wouldn't say he's even necessarily lived up to what he did last year. So you pair that with the right side of the line is struggling, and the unit as a whole is getting caught up in these, you know, sometimes back-breaking penalties, and it's really hurt the offensive production on top of the scheme being poor, Lagway struggling as he has.
Mm-hmm. And then is there any explanation for why Jaden Baugh is not getting as much touches, particularly, you know, the LSU game stands out where DJ threw all those interceptions and we asked him to throw the ball nearly 50 times. The South Florida game, hot start, and then he completely disappears from the game plan seemingly with a struggling quarterback. And now maybe against Miami, a different story because of that front, which that makes sense. But any reason why Jaden Baugh is not more active in the game plan?
Yeah, I think it's largely because of what's occurring, them having to pass because they're getting down. And granted, like, I understand that to a certain extent. Against a team like USF is where I scratch my head, where he comes out, is averaging like over 10 yards a carry on the first drive and then isn't really seen again for a while. Like, that's the type of team that even if you are losing or in a closely contested game, just keep running the ball. Their defense isn't going to hold up against Jaden Baugh. And even this offensive line, even if it's taken a step back, I think they would have handled their business if they committed to the ground game against USF. Whereas at LSU, for example, you're down close-ish as it may be. You want to go out and try and get on the board, and I think you have to commit to the passing game a bit more. The inverse being everything we've just talked about. The struggles with DJ's injuries, the struggles with the scheme. So maybe I'm thinking too much. I mean, maybe if they were just to commit to the ground game, even when the odds are stacked against them and traditionally you would want to pass the ball, at this point, it would probably be more effective. You know, I'm looking at it from a bird's eye view that I would, as a play caller, want to commit to the passing in those situations. But how can you really, when all you've got all these factors working against you.
Yeah. Do you give him any chance to pull something like they did last year where they get hot and kind of save Billy Napier's job, or do you think we're beyond even that?
I think we're beyond it. I mean, like, maybe I'm wrong. Obviously, last year is a great example of how things can change. But from my perspective, that winning streak was more a sign of false hope being generated when you consider just the previous results. I mean, shoot, the first several games of last season and what was required of them to turn it around, they caught lightning in a bottle in that four-game winning streak. Five games, if you want to include LIU at the beginning of this season. But obviously, that shutout win was not reflective of how talented this team is. And I would go as far as to say that winning streak is not reflective whatsoever of what Billy Napier's tenure in Gainesville looks like. There's far too much underperforming, especially against ranked opponents on the road, obviously against SEC competition. Like, what we're seeing right now is drastic and very bad, but it's largely more reflective of Billy Napier's tenure in Gainesville than what a four-game sample size out of, what, 43? Now, at this point, would suggest.
Mm-hmm. And the upcoming schedule, we all know it's a freaking gauntlet. Texas at A&M, Mississippi State at home, Georgia. I mean, could you – I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but if they make a move, if they let go of Billy Napier – any idea of ballpark when that could happen?
I mean, I'm
today.
I'm wondering why it wasn't Sunday with the way this season has started, and maybe that's me rushing. I understand people theorize that there's fear about opt-outs and transfers and redshirting through four games. That could very well be Florida's logic here, because I do think that this ship has sailed. I think this experiment's over, and maybe I'll eat crow about it, because whether or not it's the right decision, we've seen them be patient with Billy Napier in the past, so maybe they'll continue to be. But I would think that if that's the theory, if it's about the red shirts and potential opt-outs, then they're sitting at 2-5, maybe even 1-6 come the second bye week, which I don't think we can rule out with how Mississippi State beat Arizona State a couple weeks ago. I don't see it would baffle me if they didn't make the move at that point. If those are the results that you're looking at come the second bye week, there would just be no way, I think, for anyone to rationalize that decision.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, again, prepare yourself. I mean, I'm sure you're already prepared, but for a coaching search, and of course, it's already happening, even though I thought last year would kill this, but Lane Kiffin to the Swamp. I mean, do you think that's going to be a top target for Florida?
I mean, he should have been 3 years ago. So, like that gives me some pause if they're going to look at him and be like, okay, this is the guy this time. But I wouldn't rule it out whatsoever. I think based on exactly what the struggles have been at this point, and if you're trying to hold on to DJ Lagway and recruit the quarterback position better around him, Lane's got to be at the top of your list. But if anything, the way I see it, just because it's so early and I'm not hearing anything on specific guys they're going after yet, just because Billy's still, you know, in his position and they're being tight-lipped. But I would anticipate that this time around, it's not, as Scott Strickland said, he didn't meet with anyone else. He knew he wanted to get Billy Napier, and that's what he was going to do. I would imagine this time around, it's going to not be hone in on one person and disregard everyone else. And it would help, I think, if they do make the move at the second bye, give themselves a month and a half before they really need to have something in place before signing day. Obviously, the moving transfer portal window, if it is indeed in January, helps in that instance. But all that said, regardless of the timetable they give themselves, I would think that this will be a broader search because of how last time went and the results that we've seen from that kind of decision making.
Yeah, which is interesting, which is what I did want to ask you, just your thoughts. I don't know that there's a right or a wrong answer because so much is changing with the portal and things of that nature. But is there a benefit, you think, to doing this quickly as opposed to waiting? And I guess it really just depends on, you know, I'm talking maybe by the end of the season. Is there a benefit to doing it a little bit earlier than that?
I think there's a benefit for roster retention if everyone knows the way this is going. And like, sure, the players, the defense in particular, might still be out there fighting, but I think the writing's on the wall. I think most see this coming. So in my opinion, when you're like talking to families and showing players your level of urgency as a football program, I would see it as beneficial to not delay as much as you can and show the players that you're hoping to hold on to, as well as the college football world at large, that you're willing to make a move when it's clear you need to make a move. You know, we've seen searches that last a little bit and they land on the right guy. We've seen searches that are very short and they land on the right guy. Can also say in both instances, you see teams land on the wrong guy, but that's besides the point. To me, you do want to at least have a little bit of time to work with. And granted, the season's still going on, so some people will be focused on the day-to-day and making sure the interim coach is in a good position. But the decision-makers, you know, give them a little bit of a running lane to make sure that they cross their T's, dot their I's, meet with all the candidates that they need to, or at least, you know, backdoor network with the candidates and their agents that they need to. So you're not rushing to make a decision. Because what, Billy Napier was hired... I guess Dan Mullen was relieved 2 weeks before the season ended, but then Napier was hired almost immediately after that. That's a fine window. I think that they would benefit a little bit more from having an extended period of time and really, really delve into a strong list of potential candidates.
Right. And if my memory is accurate, I think Billy Napier would have been hired even sooner. But if I recall, he wanted to coach, I guess it would have been the Sun Belt Championship, which I believe he won. So... if not for that, it may have been even a week prior that he was hired.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And based on my theory from this time around, I would imagine we will see Scott Strickland and company meet with or network with a handful of candidates. I don't think you want to make your hire based off your first interview. You need the time. You need to make sure every resource is exhausted, and you can't do that in 1 week, in my opinion.
And then one more, if I could put you on the spot here. I love doing this. But if I know he just got an extension, but if Scott Strickland makes a poor hire again after Napier, will it be his last football hire at Florida, if you had to guess?
Huh. Right now, I'd say no. I guess it depends on how quickly they allow the poor hire to. Right. Prove themselves as that.
Just don't hire Chad Morris is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, like, from my perspective, based on the results of his football hires, the fact that he's still going to hold the job, to me, it seems like what's more important to the university with Scott Strickland is these renovations that are coming to the Swamp through 2030. And coincidentally, that is exactly when his athletic directorship will end based on the extension. And he goes into that post AD role, kind of like Jeremy Foley. I mean, at that point, I would assume that he's nothing more than guidance and certainly not making a decision on a coaching hire. The terms of the extension, the fact that he has a job lined up for when he, you know, rides into retirement, makes me think his job is safe here unless he's fired for cause over something. Not to suggest that that's like anything
right
could happen based on what I know, but just, I think he's set for life right mm-hmm. now.
And then I just thought of one more question, Zach. Really appreciate your time. Mm-hmm. But I know, you know, there was obviously speculation last year that they were going to fire Napier, and they decided not to, and they reinvested the money they saved essentially into the roster. Do you have any idea, and again, this is probably a very difficult question to answer, but any idea how much money is out there within the Florida fan base if and when they hire a new coach that they could throw into NIL, because I know how large of a fan base this is, and nothing excites right. a fan base more than getting a new coach, particularly if it's a popular coach. I could imagine they could drum up quite a bit of money to help that whoever the new coach is put a roster together. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it helps a lot more right now compared to this time last year that the cap is in place and the revenue sharing is. But Florida's had its NIL struggles. I think we've talked about them in the past. It was more not that they didn't have the money. They struggled at first to get that ball rolling and to prioritize it. But I to your point exactly, like nothing energizes a fan base more than when it's time to move on and you go get a new coach, everyone's going to be amped up and ready for that coach to hit the ground running, and they'll put their money where their mouth is. So I would think that, especially now that the buyout's even smaller, I think it's going to be what, like 19.5 at the end of this season. Obviously, you got to factor in who they hire. If they pull a head coach from somewhere else, they're obviously going to have to throw some money to that program. But one way or another, I don't think that would be much of a detriment. I think that they would be able to at least have the money to retain the players that they want to retain. And I would think at least come out strong out of the gate, whether it's in high school recruiting or obviously the portal. I would think that that's got to be where your focus is for whoever this next head coach is.
Yeah. All right, Zach, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Before you go, can you tell our audience how to follow you and how to find your work?
Yeah, everything I've got is over at swamp247.com. I throw my important stories on Twitter, X. I try not to be on there as much as I used to. but I mean, like last night, I put out a banger tweet saying I needed a cigarette when ESPN said that it's like nearly equal odds for Florida to go 1-11 than make a bowl game. So if you're looking for occasionally funny tweets, I got you there. But most of my stuff's over at Swamp247.
All right, Zach, thank you so much. And hey, good luck, because I think you're going to need it the next couple weeks, next couple months, as Florida's season continues and eventually a coaching search begins.
You know what I'm going to need? A cigarette. Appreciate you, man. Thank you, as always.